the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of March 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, U.S. EPA is not expected to make a decision on increasing the ethanol blend rate, at least for months. USDA Secretary Vilsack wants to boost it to as much as 15%. And President Obama's proposed $500,000 worth of gross sales farm program cap may be DOA. Even Iowa's Senator Charles Grassley, a proponent of caps, thinks it's a bad idea. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour, and then we'll continue in that vein of government programs and our exploration of the ACRE program. For the Ag Economist from the U of I, today we'll explore the triggers that cause the counter-cyclical portion of ACRE to pay out. Hey, and don't forget, in 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast right here on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on a Monday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby March wheat, 15 and three quarters of a cent lower, $4.94 and three quarters of settlement price. May at $5.06, down 15 and a half for the afternoon. And July at $5.18, down 15 and a quarter. September wheat at $5.42 and a quarter, down 16 cents. March corn futures, $3.43 and a half, seven and a quarter lower. The May at $3.50 and a quarter, down 8 3/4. July corn, $3.59 and a half, 9 cents lower. In September, $3.68 and a quarter, down 9 1/2 cents. December corn futures, $3.80 and a quarter cents, down 10 3/4 for the afternoon. From the crude oil, nearby contract, $4.61 lower. Ethanol, 0.3 cents lower at $1.51. And the RBOB gasoline, just about 0.8 cents lower at $1.29. March soybeans at $8.48 and a half, down 26. The May down 28 at $8.44. And November at $7.93, 35, rather 4 1/2 lower. Meal down $8 at $2.67.80. Oil at $30.10, 75 lower, 70 lower rather. And April live cattle at $83.95, down $1.97.5. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. April crude oil futures are trading at $40.15 a barrel, down $4.61 for the day. The May futures at $42.45 are down $4.44. March ethanol at $1.51, 3 cents lower. April futures 3 6/10 lower at $1.51 2/10. Natural gas at $4.15 6/10, 0.4 cents lower. The RBOB gasoline at $1.29. Off 8 2/10 cents. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, down 10 7/10 cents, is trading at $1.16. Propane futures, 64 7/10 cents, just 2 10/10 cents lower. And the gold futures, down $2.50 at $939. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands 235 points lower at $68.28. U.S. dollar trading at $88.94, up 0.77. And the CRB index at 200.46 is down 12.88 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like this afternoon. In northeastern Illinois, a mix of clouds, some sunshine, a few snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs today from 22 in northeastern Indiana to 37 in the far southern parts of Illinois. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy skies. Lows will range from 8 in northern Indiana to 20 in southwestern Illinois. And tomorrow, mostly sunny skies early. They'll become partly cloudy in northern Illinois during the afternoon. Highs will range tomorrow from 30 in northeastern Indiana to 42 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Hey, don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you can find all kinds of interesting things, including the Closing Market Report. You can listen to it after the fact anytime you'd like as an MP3 file, or sign up to have it delivered to you automatically as a podcast. It's all at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. The 2009 All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting may be our best ever. Featured analysts include Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises, ADM Chief Economist Perry Dixon, Westchester CEO Murray Wise, Bob Bastifer of First Midwest Bank, University of Illinois Agricultural Economist Gary Schnicke, and WILL Meteorologist Ed Kieser. That's March 10th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. Thanks to these agribusinesses for helping to support this year's meeting: the Andersons, AgriGold Hybrids, ADM Investment Services, and L&M Commodities.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, is with us this afternoon. Hi, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Kind of an ugly Monday. We've got new lows in the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the day.
Boy, that's the underlying factor as investor confidence, consumer confidence. This confidence level just went out the window over the weekend, especially with some of your top investors of the world, Warren Buffett in general, talking about the economy and shams, and also two ideas that this overall economy might not turn around for another 1 to 2 years. So that's got the outlook kind of dim, per se. Not to say we won't have some ups and through here, but the feeling now is it's going to take some type of a major event to sort of turn a psychology. It can either be from the outside sector, such as a dramatic turn in the investment side of the equation, or else some type of weather event. And the earliest weather event would be some type of harvest delay out of the southern hemisphere, or else a planting delay here in the U.S. would probably stimulate some renewed buying interest that would have more up than just a so-called dead cat bounce.
And what are you seeing in the Dow and the primary reasons behind its drop? I know investor confidence, but is it a message to President Obama about the stimulus package? Are there other things afoot politically that we might be aware of, or is it just simply that the economy is continuing to slide?
Well, by any time there's some type of stimulus package announced or some word encouragement, it just makes things worse, it seems like. But the overall factor is you look at every I can't say every, but majority of your stocks or companies, it's all been hit hard. And there's a few sectors that are hanging in there with some promise or some hope. But for the most part, your big dogs, the meat and potatoes, have been sort of taken away. But not only the stock price, but when you look at the overall company, bond investors in these companies are on edge too. So it's just a whole house of cards or domino effect. And whenever you see the government still trying to help these banks and throwing money at the banks and not seeing a turn in here, it just lessens everybody's confidence. Anybody that does have some, well, I can't say anybody, but most people who have money to invest is sort of hanging on to it right at the moment here and not really wanting to jump into the so-called ring of fire here until we have some type of term. But the thing is, if you look at the big picture, I sort of look at it as you had people who had jobs that couldn't pay their bills. Now you have people who don't have jobs. How do you expect them to pay bills? So it's a tough situation, and it's probably going to get worse before it gets better.
Is it, in your opinion, on the commodity market side, more difficult to handle the upside run that happened last year or this downturn that happened this year for your clientele? I know that one of them tend to make more money than the other simply because producers are usually holders of grain. But is it tougher for you to figure the market out on which side of that ledger?
Both. on the upside, the average producer, average person looks back, boy, I wish I wouldn't made that first sale. It was wrong, so I'm not going to sell it more until it tops. And so unless you have a marketing plan, do upscale upselling, it's a tough up market. Plus people who sold, who had hedges on, it's kind of hard to make the margin call and stick to the plan when you see the dramatic move that we saw over the last year. In a normal market, it's okay because people can hang on and realize what's going on, but the magnitude we saw last year made it really tough. Then on the downside in here, I've paid high inputs. I need higher prices to pay those higher inputs, and so some producers got caught holding cash grain and not looking at the dead cat bounces to get stuff sold, and maybe want more of a bounce than what we've seen in through here. So it's been a tough up and a tough down here on the huge move that we've seen. The key, though, is to develop a plan and stick to it. Now, one has to ask, you know, how much risk is there to the downside? Front month corn could probably slip down to the $3 level, and this front month bean could probably slip down into the mid $6 level, unless we turn the economy and investor confidence around. So one has to ask himself, you know, how much downside risk can I take in through here, and if I want to manage that risk at all.
Okay, we'll talk more about that on Monday of next week and then Tuesday over at the Beef House next week, too.
Very good.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hey, it's a Monday afternoon, the second day of March here on the Closing Mark Report. Our farmer appreciation segment coming up next. I'm going to take a little liberty. Third time we've had somebody write in on this one. It's a brand new program. And Carl and Dorothy Spencer, who are the son and daughter of Brad Spencer from Yale in Granville Township, Jasper County, Illinois, say he is now celebrating his 40th year as a farmer. And his birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Brad. They wrote this message to us last Friday. They say their dad began farming back in 1969 when he and his brother took over the family swine operation. And in 1971, he began raising crops when he rented his first piece of ground and planted the beans. Along the way, he expanded the number of cattle in a herd he began in high school as a 4-H and FFA project. And Carl and Dorothy say that their dads had many enjoyable memories and accomplishments as a producer and struggles, too, on the farm. They say he's inspired each of them to pursue careers in agriculture and that this year Carl will complete a master's in animal sciences and intends to one day farm full-time on the family farm, and that Dorothy is completing a degree in agricultural communications and will one day be an agricultural columnist. Both children are attending the University of Illinois. One final note, this in a paragraph. From a young age, they say he instilled into his daughter Dorothy and his son Carl a love and understanding for the importance of agriculture, not only to their family, but to the country as well. And that their father, Brad Spencer, now 40 years on the farm, taught them much about animal and crop production and how to be good stewards of both livestock and the land. Their thanks and our thanks go out to Brad Spencer on this milestone in his life, 40 years on the farm. Thank you to Carl and Dorothy Spencer for writing this note. If you'd like to be a part of our farmer appreciation segment, just drop us a line at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L, agstaff, all one word, at illinois.edu. Or call this number, 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities, hosting planning seminars at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 3rd in Watseka, Illinois, and at 3 p.m. Wednesday, March 4th in Terre Haute, Indiana. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Monday afternoon, the second day of March. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. For all that information on our All Day Ag Outlook meeting next Tuesday, the 10th of March. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Environmental Protection Agency officials say it likely will be a matter of months before the EPA decides whether to increase the percentage of ethanol that can be blended into the nation's gasoline supply. Agency Administrator Lisa Jackson says that the EPA does not have a precise schedule regarding when it might make the decision, but she made it clear it would be months and not weeks. The blend rate for ethanol in a gallon of gasoline is now 10%. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack recently said he would like to see that percentage raised to as much as 15% to help boost domestic demand for corn-based ethanol. Ethanol's supporters and producers say the economic survival of the industry could hinge on EPA's decision to raise the blend cap. Is President Barack Obama's proposal to phase out direct payments to farmers with more than $500,000 in sales dead on arrival on Capitol Hill? Most congressional agricultural leaders are reacting negatively to the idea. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley says farm bill caps should be based on income and not gross sales. Grassley says, quote, "Just because I sell a lot of corn doesn't mean that my input costs to grow that corn weren't even higher. To maintain a safety net for farmers, limiting farm payments must be based on that income and an across-the-board cap on the amount of payments." Senator Mike Johanns, who served as Secretary of Agriculture from 2005 to 2007, also issued a detailed statement questioning the logic of a cap based on gross sales. A futures market regulator said Friday he is seeking criminal authority for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to address the roughly two-thirds of cases that are not prosecuted by the Department of Justice. CFTC Commissioner Bart Children, in a letter to Attorney General Eric Holder Friday, stated his desire for criminal authority. Children said, quote, "There's no good reason we don't have the authority other than we've never had it and it has always been that way." Chilton said during the last 5 years, 108 cases out of 173 that could have involved jail time were not prosecuted. And Pilgrim's Pride will idle three U.S. chicken processing plants in Georgia, Arkansas, and Louisiana as the company continues to deal with an ongoing glut of meat. The closings are expected to produce annual savings of about $110 million a year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming here at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. It's next Tuesday, not this one, but the following one, on the 10th day of March over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can find all the details at willag.org. Now up next, the final specs for the new federal farm program called ACRE are still being worked out. Yet, as you'll hear from University of Illinois ag economists, they say enough is known about this program to evaluate it against the traditional farm program. Today, we'll explore the triggers that cause the counter-cyclical portion of ACRE to pay out. University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good thinks that there's a fair chance, even in 2009, that an ACRE countercyclical payment might be triggered based on the state guaranteed revenue. Whether or not an individual farm might be eligible for payment would depend, of course, on local conditions. This double trigger for the payment, says Good, makes it imperative for farms, units, opted into the ACRE program to also be covered by crop insurance.
Consensus is that you need to use it in conjunction with crop insurance, that it does not replace crop insurance because of the double trigger phenomenon. That is, there could be a payment triggered based on state average revenue, but an individual farmer that year may have been in a good producing area, have high yields, and not trigger a payment. But the converse is more concerning, is that the state revenue trigger is not reached, but an individual farmer has a poor year, poor yields, and low income, and would not receive a payment because the state level trigger was not reached.
It is important, then, for farms, units enrolled in the ACRE program to also be covered by a federal crop insurance policy.
So that if there is an individual farm loss and no state trigger, there can be a payment under the crop insurance.
In terms of crop insurance level, Good says because the spring price guarantees for corn and soybeans are much lower than last year's, it will be important to increase the coverage levels. He uses this example.
At 540 price guarantee last year, you say 75% coverage still gives me an awfully good floor on my revenue. With a $4 guarantee and a 75% coverage, now you're saying that floor may not cover my cost of production if I have a problem. I may want to bump that up to 80 or 85% coverage so that I'm raising my revenue guarantee with the crop insurance.
The final crop insurance figures were not set at the time this piece was recorded and written, but will be by the time you hear it. Check your local FSA office for those official numbers. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to check in on what's been working in the agricultural cash grain market. On the line with us this afternoon are the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd. It's Brian here.
Hi, Mr. Stark. How are you today?
Doing well.
Tell me about the marketplace, please.
Well, obviously, it's all driven by the outside markets. I think we're pretty much connected at the hip once again, just like last fall. Dow takes a beating. Our commodity markets take a beating. I think at some point, though, as you approach the acreage report here at the end of March and spring planting, fundamentals are going to have to be dealt with to some extent, and weather will become a big part of this market over the course of the growing season. But for now, until we get to the here and now with the USDA prospective plans report, we're going to be watching the outside markets for direction.
Is there much discussion among your peers about end users and whether they are booked up to this point with their needs? And that might be because of the slowdown in usage on the other end from the consumer side?
Well, I don't think they're still covered. Yes, we've seen a slowdown in usage from the consumer side, but the end user still has grain to buy. I think generally the first half of the month he feels the most comfortable. The last half of the month seems to be the time of the month he generally scrambles for coverage. And because of that, we've seen a strong, firm basis in both corn and beans. And I don't see that going away anytime soon until the farmer ends up giving up and starts to put new grain into the pipeline.
Well, given that, it could be a really tight basis by the time we get to the end of March, I would think, as farmers are more interested in their planters than they are in moving grain.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I don't see, unless we start seeing a rally that would generate movement, you may not see a weakness in the basis till after planting, maybe into the June time frame.
Thanks much, Brian. What are your bids for the day?
350 cash corn, 844 cash beans.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
You too, Todd.
Brian Stark is the manager of the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy up on the 23rd floor of the Boeing building in Chicago, Illinois, to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Stay with us.
It's National Mulled Wine Day. Mulled simply means heated or spiced. The wine apparently dates back to the Roman Empire during the first century of the rule of Tiberius. The recipe from then still exists today, and it includes honey, pepper, saffron, and date pits that have been soaked in wine to produce a soft mash. By medieval times, mulled wine was often preferred over water because it was thought to be more sanitary. By the 1500s, there were a number of methods for mulling wine, many involving honey and cinnamon. The biggest mulled wine punch bowl ever goes to British Admiral Edward Russell, who commanded a batch be made with 600 bottles of rum, 600 bottles of brandy, and several tons of boiling water. It was spiced with 200 pounds of nutmeg, 600 pounds of sugar, and the juice of 2,400 lemons. On this day in agricultural history in 1709, Andreas Sigmund Markgraf was born. A German chemist, in 1747, he extracted sugar from the sugar beet and determined it was identical to cane sugar. He used alcohol to extract the sugar, but his method did not lend itself to commercialization. It was not until 1802 that the first sugar beet refinery would be built. In 1797, the first patent for a washing machine was issued to Nathaniel Briggs. A fire destroyed the patent office, and no description of the device exists. And in 1879, Elmer McCollum was born. He was a chemist who discovered vitamins A, B, and D. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Monday afternoon, time to check in on the agricultural weather forecast. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the weather is clear. It's cool out. And, you know, it feels colder, I think, than it really is. 25 degrees outside on Friends Plaza here, but that was a really brisk 25 degrees when I walked from the south end of campus to the north end. Actually, I walked from the south end to my car and then drove up here, but it was still cold.
Yeah, we continue to be under the influence of Arctic air, which has moved in over the past few days, and what we're going to see here coming up is at least a brief warm-up as we go through the next several days as Arctic air then retreats and pushes off to the east. However, more cold shots are on the way, and it looks like the next couple of weeks overall are going to feature a wild roller coaster ride in temperatures here across the Midwest, let alone much of the north central and northeastern parts of the country. So overall here, winter is not quite over. While we do get a little taste of spring here again coming up by Wednesday and Thursday of this week, it does look short-lived, and especially as we get into the weekend of next week, northern areas, cold weather does return.
Yeah, those changes in temperatures usually bring along with them some fairly violent thunderstorms. Are those in the forecast anywhere?
Well, the time frame to watch, Todd, at least from some potential severe weather, although it doesn't appear, at least at this time, that we'll see anything, at least across the central and northern areas of Illinois and adjacent areas. But we do need to watch Thursday on into early Friday. That's when the next cold front will push through, and then it looks like a follow-up shot over the upcoming weekend, and so that'll at least bring some risk of rain activity, but from a severe weather standpoint, looks primarily south of here, more so lower Mississippi River Valley.
How are they faring in the Great Plains State? There's some worry about the southern areas.
Yeah, we remain concerned here with the Plains hard red winter wheat belt and the lack of precip over the winter. And at this time, there's just no sign of any significant improvement across much of the belt. And the dryness has been at least the most acute across the heart of the belt, including western Kansas, Oklahoma, and northern Texas. We've also seen a warmer bias this winter that's helped aid in the quick evaporation rates across the region. And so with no sign of any short-term improvement here, that is the area to focus on going forward.
And then finally, in South America, they're finishing crops up or beginning harvest, one of the two. How are they faring in both Argentina and Brazil?
Well, across Brazil, they're in decent shape as harvest progress continues here, and we continue to be at least ahead of schedule from a harvesting standpoint of soybeans, and all indications point towards that continuing here as there's any kind of lack of any extreme wet pattern here coming up. And then for Argentina, February has certainly featured much more significant rainfall here compared to the months of January and December, and that's at least allowed for some improvement, especially for late developing soybeans. So it looks like we stabilized things there, although from a big picture standpoint, there certainly have been some reductions this year due to drought.
Mark, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure, Todd.
Thank you. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow for this report, and that you can hear it again if you'd like on our webpage at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.